section of the introduction, actually the first two sections of the introduction yesterday. What were the two topics of the introduction? Raise your hand if you remember. What's your name again, Prabhu?
Narottama.
Mahaprabhu was chanting, one day he was with his associates by the river Padma, and he began calling out, Narottama, Narottama. And all the devotees looked around, because none of their names was Narottama. And he said, Oh Mahaprabhu, who is this Narottama who you are calling with such ecstasy? He is not one of your associates here. And Mahaprabhu said, He is coming very soon. And then he deposited his prema bhakti in the river Padma and said, Just wait for Narottama. And you give it all to him. So what is the answer of Narottama Prabhu? Yes. And the second? Like the table of contents of the book. And now the third part of the introduction, which is actually the 11th sloka of Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, will begin, which is this sloka on the board. The 12th sloka is the end of the introduction, which we haven't written on the board, but we'll speak about that at the end. So this verse, Anyabhilasita Sunyam, Jnana, Karma, Karma Adi. Adi means etc. Anavritam. Anukulena Krishna Anusilanam Bhaktir Uttama. This is the definition, Rupa Goswami's definition of pure devotional service. It has two parts, the second part and the first part. And here is what it is the definition of. Bhakti Uttama, pure devotional service. That means, what does pure devotional service mean to you? Raise your hands. What does pure devotional service mean?
It's pure. It's got no motives, it's pure love.
Yes, okay, it means, okay, that is, the pure love part is the positive part. That is the positive way to define something, telling what it is. But another way to define something is to say what it isn't. It is free from any other motive. Just like you can define this color. It is white. That is the positive definition. But another way to define it is not black, it is not blue, it is not red. That is the negative way to define it. So, this definition of uttama bhakti, of pure devotional service, has two aspects. This is called the tattva lakshana, or the secondary definition. And this is called the sarup lakshana, the primary definition. Tattva, everyone's looking at me. Tattva lakshana, marginal or secondary. And sarup means the, what does sarup mean? The primary or internal characteristics. So this tattva lakshana or the secondary characteristics about what it is not, what pure devotional service is not, is divided basically into two parts. Here is one part over here, and here is the second part over here. One, two. It is anyabhilasita sunyam, and the second one it is, we'll make it A and B to make it a little easier there. This is the tattva lakshana, the secondary. Number two, it is secondary. And over here, it is devotional services has three, pure devotional service has three characteristics. Anukulyena, Krishna, and Anushilanam, A, B, and C. This is the Sarup Lakshana, and the Tattva Lakshana. secondary, primary, positive, negative. Now what we're going to do today is describe pure devotional service according to its tatastha and sarup lakshana, the primary and secondary characteristics of pure devotional service. And then tomorrow we're going to go over Prabhupada's purport and understand how these things work and how they fit into Prabhupada's purport. And we'll discuss in further detail. This discussion, this verse is very important. Everyone should learn this verse. It will definitely be on our test. And you'll have to know it in detail as we're describing it in terms of primary and secondary characteristics. The test, by the way, probably will be at the end of next week. That will be the first test, probably. I'll tell you exactly when, but probably Friday, Saturday next week. Okay, this verse, now the definition as Prabhupada has defined it, as we read it yesterday. Now many of the verses from Nectar of Devotion or Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, they are not written, the Sanskrit verses are not written within the Nectar of Devotion because it's a summary only, a summary study only. But Prabhupada included, or rather Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami included these verses within the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So when we can get Prabhupada's translations of these, of many verses from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So this particular verse, 1111, is Madhya Lila, if you want to look it up at some point. And starting next week, our reading room will be open, which has all the books in it, so that will make it easier for study and research. It's also a very cool room down there. So this verse is Madhya Lila 19:167, verse number 167. And the next verse, 1112, which is a verse from the Narada Pancharatra, which is also a definition of pure devotional service, is Madhya 19, text 170. Sarva Pari Vinirmuktam Tat Paradvena Nirmalam Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Uttama. That verse, which from Narada Pancharatra, which we'll describe probably at the end of this class, is there as well. So here is Prabhupada's definition from Chaitanya Charitamrita of this verse. Anyabhilasita sunyam. When first class devotional service develops, that is Bhakti Uttama, one must be devoid of all material desires. Knowledge obtained by monistic philosophy and fruit of actions. The devotee must constantly serve Krishna favorably as Krishna desires. I'll read it again. When first class devotional service develops, this is Bhakti Uttama, first class devotional service or pure devotional service. Pure devotional service means there's two ways to describe it again. There's the positive way and the negative way. When you talk about something pure, you can talk about all the contaminations that don't exist within it. Just like we say, it is unalloyed steel. That means that there are no other ingredients in it. There is no brass, no this, no that. You could say it's unalloyed steel, it is free from any brass, it is free from any this, it is free from anything like that. So that is the negative way to define something that's pure. And then the positive way, what it actually consists of. So in first class devotional service, Bhakti Uttama, first class devotional service develops, one must be devoid of all material desires. So that is Anya Vilasita Sunyam. And we'll describe all this in detail as the class goes on. This is free from all material desires. Sunyam means they become sunya, zero, finished, void. These Anya Vilasita, they are finished. So one is devoid of all material desires. And what else is it devoid of? This is the negative side, the tatastha lakshana. Jnana, karma, hari, anavritta. One is devoid of knowledge obtained by monistic philosophy, that's jnana, and all fruitive actions, karma. And that's this side over here. This word, anavrita, basically means obscures. So any jnana or karma, etc., that obscures pure bhakti, it is not there, it is sunyam. We'll describe it later. Now the positive side, as Prabhupada explains, the devotee must constantly serve Krishna favorably as Krishna desires. So Krishna is a very important element in here. Krishna must be favorable, and it must be constant. Anu means constant, and Shirana means cultivation. One must be constantly cultivating his devotional service or serving. So these are the basic elements as Prabhupada has defined it in his translation in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So now we're going to go over each of the different elements one by one, so we know this verse inside and out, because this verse is the definition of pure devotional service. This is what we are meant to do. If we add things other than these, other than according to this definition or formula, then we will not be rendering pure devotional service, and it will not develop. Pure devotional service will not develop, and we will not attain to the higher realms. And again, this entire book is basically an expansion of this verse. Because, again, in the first wave, in the first part of the ocean, the eastern, it describes the general characteristics of pure devotional service. And then three different levels of pure devotional service. Pure devotional service on the sadhana level, pure devotional service on the bhava level, and pure devotional service on the prema level. And then, on the bhava level, the southern side of the ocean describes, or the second part, describes what makes rasa, which is the mixing of the five different ingredients. So this is what happens on the bhava level, going from bhava to prema. And then the five primary rasas on the western side. And then the... So this is all pure devotional service. From sadhana to prema. From shraddha to prema. All this is pure devotional service. So unless one understands what is pure devotional service, he will not practice properly. And then he will not get the desired result. So it is essential, right from the very beginning, for us to get a clear idea of exactly what pure devotional service is. Why? Why must we have that idea? Yes? So to help our preaching? Yes? Yes. Also, so we stay on the path ourselves. We will not become fooled into thinking that something that it is not gold is gold. If you want to buy gold, if that is your business, you better know inside and out what the definition of gold is, what its primary characteristics are and secondary characteristics are. There is no alloys in it. There is no mixing of iron or steel or aluminum. How do you say it? Wait. How do you say it? And how do you say it? See, depending upon where you come from, you say it differently. I'm from both places, so I get confused. Aluminium or aluminum? In Australia and England, they say aluminium. And in good old United States, aluminum. So you have to know what this gold actually is and what it's not. Otherwise, you will be confused if you are buying gold. You will become cheated. So we don't want to become cheated. And then when we teach others, as Bhakti James said, we have to be able to teach properly. So we have to know this inside and out, and we should know the characteristics and what happens. All this is going to be described. But first, the definition of pure devotional service. What it is not, we'll start with.
Because Rupa Goswami describes that.
Anya vilasita sunyam. That's one part. Jnana karma anavrita. That is the second part. So anya vilasita sunyam means, basically, it means that there are no material motives in the devotional service. You have no material desires. Some people, they go to God, and this is also going to be described in Jnana Karma Anavrita. But when some people do service, like we serve, we have a post office job, or we serve our boss in the office, but it is not pure. We are not doing it without any motive. We have plenty of motives. And what's the basic motive? We want to get some money. So we're doing service, but we want to get something in return. But that is not pure bhakti. We should understand this in the beginning, because when people come to Krishna consciousness, the tendency is to have so many motives. Chatura vira bhajante imam jana sukritino arjana artha gigyasa artha tigyanicha bharatasava. Krishna describes this in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that when one comes to Krishna, it is legitimate, but one comes for different reasons. Artha gigyasa artha ti gyanicha bharatasava. There are 4 different reasons why one will come to Krishna consciousness. Artha gigyasa artha ti gyani. The gyani wants knowledge. He wants to understand something. I want to know. He is actually knowing, he knows that he's not his body even. He has that much knowledge, he's a jnani. But he comes to Krishna to get more. And then artha jigyasa. Artha means one who is in distress. So sometimes, what is the example of the jnani, since we mentioned him first, who comes to Krishna? There are 2 famous examples. The 4 Kumaras, and the second one? Sukadeva Goswami, very good. Sukadeva Goswami was jnana, he was a jnani par excellence. He was realized on the Brahman platform from the very beginning, even before his birth. And he stayed in the womb of his mother for so many years because he didn't want, have any desire to come out, because that is the nature of a jnani. They are free from all desires. So he had no reason to come out, and he didn't want to fall into maya, because once you're out in the world and dealing with this and that, women, money, this and that, business, so many materialists, it's very easy to fall into maya. So he said, no, I have no reason to come out. He would not come out actually until Krishna assured him that he'd be okay, that maya could not touch him. When he came out, what was the first thing he did? Who knows? What is the first thing he did? Yeah. He left. Immediately he left home. What a son. He didn't even wait for the sanskara, the purificatory ceremonies. He immediately left. And Vyasadeva, his father, such an exalted personality, he wanted to give him something more. So he called him back. How did he call him back? He sent someone with 2 very wonderful verses from the Bhagavatam. Oho pakiyam stanakalakutam jigham siyapad upyad asvadbi laibhegatim datri uchitam tatonyam kam vadayalum sharanam brajema. And another one, that describes the beauty of Krishna as he walks into the forest with one earring of a forest flower, with all his his friends, and playing the flute as he went into the forest. And these verses, that's a whole pakayam, describes how Putana came to Krishna to kill him by putting poison on her breast. And Krishna was so kind to Putana that although she came to kill him, he still gave her liberation, datri. He made her his nurse. He accepted something from her devotional, her mood to kill him. She was coming as a nurse, as a wet nurse, and he accepted her breast milk. And he gave her liberation. Kamva dayalum sharanam brajema. Who could be more wonderful than Krishna? Who could be more merciful than Krishna? When you come to kill him and you put poison on your breast, he accepts the mood that you're coming as his mother and then gives liberation. So who could be more merciful than Krishna that gave this paki, this witch, Putana, liberation when she was coming to kill him? So that verse describing the most wonderful mercy of Krishna and the beauty of Krishna from the 10th canto as he goes into the forest, vibhrad, with his dhoti, the color of lightning, and filling up the holes of his flute with the nectar from his lotus lips, and surrounded by boys going into the forest, playing, exalted boys who are the most pious living entities, and so beautiful, all just chanting the glories of Krishna. These two verses, when Sukadev heard this, he immediately turned around and came back. He wanted to hear more. Desires entered his heart. Desires, but not material desires, because he was already on the Brahman platform. This point was brought out in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, in the famous Atmarama Cha Muna Jo Nagrantu Pil Rukrame, that all kinds of Atmaramas, even if you are on the Brahman platform, become eager to hear this Krishna Katha. So he is the example, Sukadeva is the example of the Jnani, who came to Krishna by the mercy of a pure, exalted Vaishnava like Vyasadeva. And the four Kumaras, by smelling the fragrance of the tulsi carried by the breeze, the Lord was wearing, in Vaikuntha, was wearing a tulsi garland. And the breeze carried that fragrance and the fragrance of his lotus feet to the nostrils of the Kumaras. And they were already on the Brahman platform. That means their minds could never become agitated. But they felt that their minds had become agitated, full of desires by smelling the tulsi. And they wanted to, and therefore they became Vaishnavas from the Brahman platform. Then there is Artha, those in distress, exemplified by Gajendra, who was trapped by the crocodile. So he called out, Krishna, 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 like that. And Krishna saved him and purified him. But his motive was not anya bilasita sunyam. He had desires. Krishna, help! That was his desire. Save me! That is Artha. And Gigyasa is Sanaka, Shonaka, Rishi, who was asking so many questions to, that means curious. Gigyasa means curious. He was asking so many questions to Suta Goswami in the field of Namasharanya. So curiosity is another reason, but it's a desire. I want to know, I want to find out. Artha gigyasa, artati. Artati means, I want money. Oh, Krishna, like Dhruva Maharaj. He went to the forest, he performed so many austerities, but what was his purpose? To get a kingdom. Kingdom greater than his father, his grandfather, Brahma. Brahma's kingdom was the universe, everything. And he wanted a kingdom bigger than everything. A childish desire. But he went to Krishna for that. And Krishna gave him something so wonderful. Actually, when Krishna revealed himself to Dhruva Maharaj, Dhruva lost all interest in getting the kingdom. And he later prayed that I was looking for pieces of glass, a kingdom. But you have given me the real jewel, your personal darshan. So, when someone comes to Krishna, they come, artha gigyasa artha ti jnani cha varadasava. They come with a material desire, and this is not pure devotional service. Anya vilasita sunyam. That no material desires can be there, nothing. And what desire is there is described in the saruplakshana, the primary definition. But this is what cannot be there. Now there's an interesting point made by the Acharyas that anya, there are two words. There is anya bilas, and anya vilasita. And there is a difference. Anya vilasita means desires. Anya vilas. So the word is not anya vilas. It is anya vilasita. So there's a little distinction between anya vilas and anya vilasita. So Rupa Goswami is not saying that all desires have to become sunya, that all desires have to be vanquished. There's a case where you can have desires, and that is called anya vilasita. An example, if at the time of your death, your throat is choked up, your heart is attacking you, you're having a heart attack, and you're given so much pain, and you're having a hard time breathing and going, it is so difficult. Actually, the moment of death is such a difficult time. And if you're a devotee, you'll naturally, one will call out, "Oh, Krishna, save me!" With every bit of energy he can muster up, "Krishna, Krishna, I'm yours, save me!" So, I want to be saved by Krishna. So is that a desire? Yes, it's a desire. But is it contrary to pure devotional service in that difficult situation? It isn't, actually. So therefore, instead of saying anya vilas, which means free from all extraneous desires, anya vilasita is used, which means when you are in your regular consciousness, not in an extraordinary consciousness, you can have no material desires. Those kind of desires are sunyam. But if you're in extraordinary consciousness and you have some desire like Krishna save me, it is not contradictory to pure devotional service. That is the difference between anya vilas and anya vilasita. In your normal consciousness, all desires other than to serve Krishna have to become sunyam. That is anya vilasita. In normal consciousness, all desires other than to serve Krishna have to become sunya, zero. Anya vilas, that would mean all desires, and it would not cover the exceptional circumstance when one is at the moment of death or something like that. So those type of exceptional circumstances which are when one calls out to Krishna for some type of help and one is not in a regular state of mind and not a regular consciousness, that is not contrary to pure devotional service. It is still within the realm of bhakti uttama. Right, right. Because he was a materialistic elephant. Right? So that was actually an increase in his Krishna consciousness to take shelter of Krishna. But for a pure devotee, it's as if a decrease in his consciousness. You follow? He was just an old elephant. He was enjoying in the water with his female elephant friends. But this doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean that. It's defining pure devotional service. Your general consciousness is, "I only am serving Krishna." But if this happens occasionally in a difficult situation, it doesn't disqualify you from pure devotional service. Clear? Huh? No, but understand the point. What is a pure devotee's regular consciousness? "Oh Krishna, let me serve you." Not even, "I don't care. Janmini janmini shvare bhavadad bhakti ahitiki tway. You send me to hell, you send me to heaven, I don't care. I just want to serve you." That is a pure devotee's consciousness. And then in an extraordinary circumstance he says, "Krishna save me." But Gajendra's consciousness was, "Oh, look at that beautiful, look at that tail on her. Look at that long trunk. She's beautiful. Look at those beautiful ears. I've never seen such ears. They are like potato chips. Oh, I love you, my dear." And then, in his extraordinary circumstance, he took shelter. Help, help, Krishna, Krishna. Because he's a Sukritino. He's pious. You follow now? Okay.
Can you give an example of a devotee under extreme circumstances praying for Krishna?
Yeah, I just gave one. But he's dying. He's dying.
He's example of a person.
Huh? So many.
Arjuna was crying for the Lord when he was not like that. He was just chanting,
Hare Krishna, no worries, no problems. Krishna was taking, Mahaprabhu was taking the beating marks on his back.
He wasn't feeling it.
He wasn't feeling it. Mahaprabhu was accepting it.
He was thinking that this is generally devotee should have desire to be protected by the Lord.
A devotee accepts whatever situation he's in, a pure devotee, as Krishna's mercy. And he understands that all situations are Krishna's protection.
But that doesn't mean that devotee always wants to be protected by Krishna or saved by Krishna.
He is already in Krishna's protection. A pure devotee, a devotee is in Krishna's protection. He is under the shelter of the internal energies. He accepts whatever happens to him as Krishna's mercy. Svarga pavarga narakeshu apitu yarta darshana. He doesn't care if he's in heaven, hell, he sees them all equally. This is the idea. Krishna, 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 I just want to serve you. If you want to, if nothing can happen without your desire, if this is your desire, like Parikshit Maharaj. He was cursed to die. He did not go to Krishna for protection, he just accepted it. Krishna's mercy. He was cursed by, the Sringi Brahmana boy. Let's, you know what you should, we should do just to make sure that we complete the verse. If you have any questions, just note them down and we'll save some moments at the end for them. Otherwise, I can see that we're not going to get to the end. We'll just stay at the beginning, which is also nice, but we do, because it's a course, not just preaching. We have to cover a certain amount of curriculum. So this is the first part here. Anya vilasita sanya. Then jnana, karma, anavrita. Anavrita means obscured. So that means, this means that one's consciousness cannot be obscured or covered by any desires for jnana and karma. Now this means that when we say jnana, we don't mean, what does jnana mean? What does jnana mean? Raise your hand. Okay. So it means, but usually we think jnana means knowledge, right? So someone could say, oh, I have a knowledge to read Nectar of Devotion, Srimad Bhagavatam. I want to memorize so many verses, I'm here. And sometimes actually, if we see a devotee who's very interested in studying Bhagavatam or Chaitanya Charitam, we'll say, oh, he's a jnani. We'll criticize him in that way. Oh, he's a jnani. But this is not the type of knowledge, the jnana, about Krishna and the process of Krishna consciousness. That is not what's being referred to as jnana here that should be removed. Again, the jnana that brings us closer to Krishna, that kind of knowledge is not the jnana that is being referred to here. Because this is jnana anavrita that obscures Krishna. Specifically, knowledge, to become involved and desire knowledge that we are not our body, that we are aham brahmasmi, that I am spirit, that tat tamasi, that I am that. Soham, I am that. This type of knowledge that leads to merging with the Supreme. This is anavrita. This will obscure bhakti. So this knowledge is specifically, and this desire for this knowledge, and the knowledge itself, should not be in the heart of a pure devotee. It cannot be in the heart of a pure devotee. And if it is in the heart of a devotee, his devotion is misra, or mixed. He is not an uttama bhakta. And similarly, someone can say, I've read the Upanishads, and the Upanishads say that I should perform, I should go to the forest, and I should do this and that, and I should chant Om, and I should practice this type of Astanga Yoga, or something like that. In the Bhagavad Gita, it says this, I should practice Astanga Yoga, and do these, moving the life airs up, and moving the Kundalini, and things like that. There's so many types of yoga and Shakti manipulation that one can do. And bhukti mukti siddhi kami sakali ashanta, that you can desire mukti, and this will be explained later. If the desire for mukti is in the heart, liberation, moksha, mukti is in the heart, it is so difficult to remove. It is so difficult to remove. And if you talk to, in India, you really see this. You can talk to Mayavadis, impersonalists, Mayavadis, and you can talk about Krishna, Krishna's pastimes, Krishna and Mother Yasoda, Krishna and the gopis, and they will sit there, yes, 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 this is good. This is very wonderful. And they will say yes to everything. And inside they're thinking that loving Krishna is the means to becoming one with Krishna. This is very, very tricky, the most dangerous business, this desire for moksha, and therefore the process of jnana yoga, the impersonal, meditative, mental, manipulative jnana yoga, which is described in the Bhagavad Gita, is actually rejected, even though the end can be Krishna. If, of course, in Sukadeva Goswami is the example of that, and the four Kumaras. But if the desire to merge in the heart, become one, and attachment to those processes actually disqualifies one for uttama bhakti. And similarly, karma. So it's jnana, karma. It's the whole sections of karma yoga, not karma yoga, the karma kanda sections of the Bhagavad Gita and the Vedas. Actually, such a great percentage of the Vedas deal with this karma kanda. That means to elevate oneself in this life and in future lives. In this life, get wealth, get a beautiful wife, prosperous fields, producing much grain, many cows, health, so many things. One practices karmakanda. Have a good son. Defeat one's enemies in this life. And then in next one's next life, go to Swargaloka, go to heaven. This is all karma. Live for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And we are infected with so many desires like this. Subtly, grossly, I want to become, now I'm just the sweeper. They've given me the service to wash the pots, but in 2 years you see, I will become president, and after that I will be GBC, and then after that I will be guru, and then everyone will be under my control. This is simply material contamination, material ambition, and as long as we carry this seeds of this material ambition in gross and subtle ways in our heart, this is called upasakagan, weeds. Nisiracha, kutinati, jivahimsan, lava puja, puja, pratishtari, yata upasakagan. These must be removed from the heart if we want to practice pure devotional service. Nisiracha, this is how it is described by Krishnadas Kaviraj and his teachings to Rupa Goswami. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings to Rupa Goswami, Nisiracha, behavior unbefitting a Vaishnava. Jivahimsan, that means killing, animal killing, or Mayavad philosophy.
Lava puja, desire to get so many, love, greed, I want this and I want that, and a new tape recorder, and a newer tape recorder, and the newest tape recorder, and new shoes, and this and that, and videos, and what, and a better room, and on and on and on. So many material desires plague our heart. This is lava. I want, I want, I want. But not I want to serve Krishna. And because if these weeds are there, the desire to serve Krishna cannot grow properly in our heart and cannot develop from sadhana to prema if these things are there. And then puja, I want to be worshipped. When will they understand how great I actually am? They'll see one day. One day you'll all understand my position. You will see. You will see. You don't know now, but you will see later. I want. You will see. These things, they're hiding in our heart, just waiting. Just waiting to come out and kill us. Kill our devotional life. And until these things are removed, and it's easy to laugh about it, but sometimes when we look in the mirror, and sometimes we get very frightened when we see what is there, the envy and these desires, and the fear also, the fear something will be taken away, we won't get these things. All these things are very deep. We are conditioned souls. They hide in the false ego. They hide in the mind, in the intelligence. This is lust. Different types of lust and envy of Krishna. They're just in there. So to remove them, and then the most difficult one to remove is the pratishtha, the desire for pratishtha, which means false prestige. More like, I am really wonderful, and I'm trying, the desire to become for fame, profit, adoration. This is the most difficult thing, because almost all of these, you can keep them in devotional service, if you're not careful, and use them. They will come in the guise, oh, I'm a devotee. Therefore, I will take this position. I will become Krishna conscious. I will become temple president. I will become GVC. I will become guru. And it can be just a weed in the guise of pure devotional service, and it will kill the actual devotional creeper. So we should, from the very beginning, we should not let these things overtake our heart. And there's two ways that. One, we should examine our own heart and see the problems that we have. And we should always surrender to the spiritual master and sadhus and Vaishnavas. And always keep association with devotees. If we associate with non-devotees, these will blossom like anything. Because this is the source of a non-devotee's pleasure. All these things. And we want to pull them out and throw them away. And if we associate with non-devotees, we can be sure they will come in our heart. Prabhupada once told me that we are social by nature. Everyone is social. We need people. We cannot just go to the forest and live alone like that. We cannot. We need association by nature. And if we associate with, therefore we must learn to make very deep affectionate friendships with the devotees. And sometimes this does not happen in this time. The devotees feel very, very lonely. People, I'm doing my service and I'm going to do my work and I don't care about anyone. And what happens is the devotees get very lonely sometimes. And the brahmacharis, this happens to a lot. The brahmacharis become very lonely for some affectionate relationships. And then what happens? They fall into losing their brahmacharya. They want to get married because they become lonely as brahmacharis. But no! The relationships amongst the devotees must be very, very affectionate because we are social by nature. And if we cannot satisfy the need for affectionate, loving dealings in the society of devotees, we will be forced to associate with non-devotees. Just because of because of the need to associate and be friendly and carry on social dealings. And Prabhupada said, if we associate with non-devotees, we will not be able to follow the four rules. This is the nature of bad association. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said, as the prime characteristic of a Vaishnava is asatsanga tyag, a Vaishnava tyag. That means to give up the association of non-devotees is the most important and prime characteristic of a Vaishnava. And we cannot perform pure devotional service if we carry these desires in our heart. And the Adi, Jnana, Karm, Adi. Adi means like, etc. and others. So, the other desires that cover bhakti, it's not only that it's jnana and karma, but there are others as well. And they are the desire to perform yagas, tapasya, and yoga. Siddhis, the desire for siddhis, material perfections, performing yoga. All these are in the category, so many other desires are in the category of adi, and they all must be given up. Now, this does not mean that some of these things can, the externals of these things cannot be done. For example, if someone has, father has just died, this is the example that the Acharyas have given, and there is a ceremony that the followers of the Vedic system perform when the parents die, called Shraddha, which means they, in fact, in every religious tradition in the world, there is, when one's parents dies, there's a ceremony that one must perform for the benefit of the departed soul. Every tradition has this. In the Vedic system, it is called Shraddha. So, if one thinks that if I don't perform the Shraddha ceremony, there'll be some loss for me or for my father, then it is in the category of karma anavrita. It is obscuring the actual purpose of bhakti and dependence on Krishna. If one performs the ceremony thinking that there is a loss, there will be something incomplete if I don't perform it, that is a covering over bhakti. It is not pure devotional service. But on the other hand, if someone thinks, I will just do this to set an example for others, for materialistic people, because they should do it. Materialistic people should perform this. It will elevate them. So if someone is thinking, I'll do it just to set an example, I know Krishna will protect my father anyway, he will give, and he will get according to his karma anyway, and I am attempting to be a devotee, so Krishna will protect him like that. So I don't need it for that side, but I will do it just to set a good example for others, and so that others don't criticize. Can you see the difference in the two moods? The same activity is being done, the Shraddha ceremony is being done, but the mood is different. The realization is different. The reasons are different. The consciousness is different. So in one case, if one is doing it to set an example, it is not obscuring pure bhakti. But if one is doing it because he thinks it will be a loss if he doesn't do it, that will interfere with pure devotional service and it takes him beyond the realm of pure bhakti. Okay, now we're not going to cover the Swarup Lakshana today, obviously. But read the whole introduction again and you'll be able to see where Prabhupada is talking, what Prabhupada is defining. You'll be able to understand the introduction clearly because he's basically going over the entire introduction from the point of view of the word by words as I am giving them. Although Prabhupada is not, sometimes he is mentioning them, sometimes he's not. But he's just going through it word in the same fashion as I am. Tomorrow we'll finish the Swarup Lakshana. these three parts over here, and we'll see if we need another day on that. Any questions, comments? Maybe we have time for one or two. Yeah.
Desire, devotees desire spiritual welfare of their family, is that material or spiritual?
It is natural. It depends how much the family part is mentioned in our, is within our heart. It is natural and it should be done. Why not? We want to be merciful to all souls. Why all souls except our family members? That's not a disqualification. They're souls. They're temporarily our family members. So here's such an opportunity. Due to the natural family affection, there's an opportunity. So if we love them very, very deeply because they are our family members, and we want to help them because of that, and it's basically a material affection, and we want to help them, then it is more using our desires for Krishna, which is very, very, very good, if that's the position we're at. But it's not as exalted as a more spiritual vision. So there is no problem with not being exalted in consciousness, as long as one is under the direction of a pure devotee who knows how to use whatever material tendencies we have to elevate us rather than degrade us. In fact, it is better to do your own duty according to your own position than to imitate another. But sometimes devotees do that too. They're on this level and they hear that this level is better, so they imitate this level. And then what happens is they go way beyond their capacity, and then they go way back to square one. So this is not good. So therefore one should keep under the guidance of one's spiritual master so that one doesn't make that mistake. That is the difference between anyavilas and anyavilasita. But impure Misra Bhakti is the road to Shuddha Bhakti. Before you can practice pure devotion, generally speaking, we have to go through the practices, the sadhanas, to bring us to a more elevated platform. We don't decry that. Chaturvidha Bhajante Imam, Dana Sukhatino, they are Sukhatinos. They are all Mahatmas, Prabhupada explains in the purport. They are great souls just because they have come to Krishna. So we don't criticize, oh, he is Mr. Bhakta, oh. he is impure, look at his... No. We should never, never, never think like that. That is aparad. We should look at ourselves like that, not others. But when someone comes in contact with Krishna like that, by Krishna's mercy, they are purified. This is to help us discriminate how we should act. Yeah. Krishna, and then. So we'll have more questions. Time for questions tomorrow, even if it takes going another day, maybe we'll do it. Yeah.
I don't see the difference between Anyabhidashita and Dhyanakarmati. It seems to me that, all Dhyanakarmati is included in all material desire. Could you explain or...
No, that's basic. This is the basic definition. That's right. All, there are different kinds of material, especially if you use the Adi there. These are the coverings. And the coverings basis is desire.
Yeah.
Not really, but this is not anyavilasa. All desires are zero, with the exception of that. And then all material desires, so it can, yeah, it's basically going into some more details, like the Adi. These are the kinds of material desires that we can have. So there's so many ways to analyze it. So we've also said this verse, Nisadatta Kutinati Jivim Sam Labha Punja Pratishtari Yata Upasakadan. So they were also not mentioned. So you can put them in the Adi, or you can put them, or Siddhikam, desire for mystic perfections. They are also in there. Okay, last question.
And this is the definition of pure devotion and service.
Yeah.
Of Christ's blood. And you said that this definition goes in sadhana bhakti, so for us, this definition, some other pure, to try to achieve this goal, we should accept ourselves.
No, no. We should perform pure devotional service.
Even in our.
We should become sadhakas in pure devotional service. And how to do this? In other words, it's all on the level of desire. So someone could be performing the practices that are going to be described in the section of sadhana bhakti with material desires. You see, so many people come to the temple and go like this, and you know, they want something. You know, usually they'll unwrap something and take out 10 pies, and you know, and so the same activity can be there, but the desire, the internal position is being described here if you want to make advancement, how it could be. So we should perform our activities in this consciousness. We should. This is what we should do. Yes. Okay, let's stop now because it's time for the sermon. Bye.